Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Thank you very much for hanging out with us on your Friday. It's Mac and Parkins on the Score. Quarantine day 10.
Feels like day 110.
But I was thinking about this, Mac. We got news today that it's an open competition between Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky. They're not committing to Mitch Trubisky's fifth-year option. Mitch is going to take the first snap in practice, whenever practice is able to occur, but they're going to split the reps 50-50. So it seems to me like it's more likely than not that there's going to be a changing of the guard at quarterback for the Chicago Bears. That's optimism. The Bulls, the next time we see them, assuming this regular season is scrapped, they will have a new president of basketball operations, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. That, by itself, will bring optimism for the Bulls. Obviously, there's optimism for the White Sox whenever baseball happens. That was true before this pandemic set in. It feels like, just in one day's worth of news, all of a sudden, there's a little bit of optimism and arrow pointing up for three-fifths of the teams in this town.
Well, yes. Let's take them one by one. If you want to talk about what Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace talked about today, I think most would regard that as a small victory. Kind of underneath what he said about an open competition is a change in his philosophy on how he's going to handle August. It sounded to me like both quarterbacks are going to play in preseason games, which is a radical departure from where he was last August when Mitch Trubisky, after 1 year in his system, didn't have to play a snap in the preseason. I know that's risky. I think it's necessary when you have guys who are unproven. And if you're going to have a competition, there's no other way to do it than ask guys to play. As meaningless as those games are, you have to ask them to play against an opponent in game scenarios and try to make the best determination you possibly can when all is said and done. And as Nagy talked about today, keep it equitable for both players. If you believe the Bulls are going to keep John Paxson around and he's still not going to be the guy who ultimately swings things, then that could be good news as well. I just fear that his presence there might scare off number one, potentially the right guy for the job, fearing that Paxson is going to be lurking and ultimately is going to remain empowered. Or number two, he just might not be able to help himself and continue to try and run the show, even though he's not supposed to be doing that. Emeritus status presidencies don't always wind up as just being that. Sometimes guys still can't help but stay in the mix. And I think the best thing for the Bulls is to have a completely different outlook and a completely different leadership group. And that means John Paxson has nothing to do with it.
And all of those points are valid. And when I say arrow pointing up, I'm not saying skyrocketing blue chip stock, you know what
hope.
I mean, like any
your hope you're selling hope today.
Yeah, well, a little bit, and you know, trying to feel good heading into the weekend. But just think about it like this: the Bears were certainly trending down, right, from 12 wins a couple years ago, wild card season, 8 wins last year, no faith in your quarterback, less faith in your coach, dwindling faith in your general manager. So that was a dip. Now, if you're getting rid of that quarterback, or at least you're demoting that quarterback, that's an upswing. Is it them getting Joe Burrow? No, that would be a skyrocket point. Is it them acquiring Tom Brady? No, many people would have way higher expectations for this team if they had Tom Brady than if they had Nick Foles. But Foles should be better than Mitch, so it's an improvement at quarterback.
It is. And yes, it is. You're right. There's no question. It's an option you didn't have a year ago. You don't have to worry about playing the career backup who's made a fortune in Chase Daniel. You don't have to worry about that anymore. You've got a guy who's proven as a successful backup at the highest level. He's won a Super Bowl as a backup quarterback.
So I just look at it like the idea of improvement and progress. No one is, I'm not saying throw a parade for Nick Foles or throw a parade for a new basketball executive. It's just, it's better, man. Like,
yeah.
Bulls hope, man. Like, just focus on that one for a minute. Like, it's been a while. Like, in a meaningful, tangible way, right? Because even when you have small victories like Kobe White and Swirsk puts him in the Hall of Fame, it's like, oh, he looks like he's going to be really good. It's like, okay.
But put him in the Hall of Fame! Put him in the Hall!
Parcheesi!
Someone earlier said, "Why? What? Swirsk playing Yahtzee.
Yahtzee. Lots of dice. Sixes.
Just they, you know, there's not been, there've been like little wins, right? LaVine progress. Wendell Carter looks solid. Markkanen regresses. Kobe White improving, but no one looks like a superstar. In order for the Bulls to change their reputation around the league, they're going to have to clean house. Hopefully, and I know you'll say, well, they're not cleaning house if he's stepping to the side, but as long as there is a new person in charge,
yeah,
it's, again, it's progress. Cleaning house entirely and putting Sam Presti there, that would be Joe Burrow. Right, that would be getting Trevor Lawrence in next year's draft, right? But moving packs aside and empowering someone new for the first time in 19 years, maybe that's the Nick Foles of basketball moves.
Well, you know who he's not, so you have hope, because you know who the guy who's been there you just absolutely don't have any faith in. Change for the sake of change. If you're convinced the guy you had isn't the right guy, then any move that is contrary to that would be a welcomed one. I was very excited about Nick Foles the first couple of days, but I very quickly tempered that enthusiasm by recognizing just how bad it got for him during his stay in St. Louis when he wasn't playing under the Reed system and he was contemplating quitting the game. When I recognized just how mortal he was last year, it was not a good year in Jacksonville. I know the team was bad around him, but he was bad too. His numbers were very Trubisky-like. And you throw in the fact that there's a team like the Patriots, which was still a playoff team a year ago, a team that's going in a different direction. Bill Belichick doesn't want him. Bill Belichick has more confidence in the guy he might be able to get at number 23 in the first round than go after Nick Foles. And he wasn't even the guy the Bears wanted first. They wanted Teddy Bridgewater, but he wanted nothing to do with this open competition. So I'm mildly optimistic about Foles being here. It's better than what they had. He's not Chase Daniel, and he's not Mitch Trubisky. If given a fair shot, I think the Bears should get better play out of the most important position on the field. So I'm more in line to say, okay, this looks good from a Bears perspective today than I am from a Bulls perspective, just because I don't know enough about who they would be bringing in and exactly how distant Paxton is going to remain.
But also, listen, the thing about the NBA is it is a true players league, right? You can have great coaching, and it only matters so much unless you have great players. You need great players. And
yeah.
So,
and you know, when John Paxson's successor becomes a great president, when he becomes the first Bulls president to land one of those great players via free agency.
Exactly right. Like, that's That is exactly right. Or when he drafts, you know, his equivalent of Giannis with the 15th pick or Steph Curry with the 7th pick, right? When he finds a superstar without winning the draft lottery. Those are the two ways. You either draft the guy who becomes the superstar or you sign the guy who becomes the superstar. And sure, you can execute trades, but you got to have assets to get trades, and the Bulls don't have too many valuable assets right now. So there's no magic wand for an NBA organization on a front office or coaching level. But it's just, it's very clearly time. People say, oh, so is it change for the sake of change? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Fine. It's been 2 decades.
Yes.
Enough's
right.
enough.
Right. Yeah, I know.
That's not an insult. Like,
we don't know if this guy is going to be any good, but we know this guy who's been here ain't.
Exactly.
So we've it's just that.
Yeah, change is good, and the new person will not be able to make it, you know, a tax incentive like there is in Texas or Florida. He's not going to make the weather warm like it is in Miami or L.A., right? He's not going to make it the biggest city in the country like New York. Like there's only going to be so much he's going to be able to do, mm-hmm. but he's going to be different, and I'm down to try different for the Bulls. I'm with you. There should be more Bears optimism. The Bears are better. Like, the Bears are closer to a Super Bowl than the Bulls are in NBA Finals.
Yeah, and the idea of both Foles and Trubisky taking snaps in August gives us a reason for the first time in how long to be juiced up for exhibition games. Think about that. I mean, nobody was expecting 3 years ago when Trubisky was a rookie, nobody was really expecting that thing to fall out of the hands of Mike Glennon. And then clearly he wasn't the guy, but there was no competition in training camp. That was going to be his job. This can potentially be very compelling preseason football. You get Nick Foles for the first quarter with the rest of the first group and Mitch Trubisky for the second quarter with the first group, or vice versa. As you mentioned, they said that Mitch is going to be the first guy who walks in the huddle. Give them both the same number of opportunities with their best players around them, and let the best man start once they start playing for real. I like that. That turns me on. That's what training camp should be for when you've got guys with career quarterback ratings in the low to mid-80s.
Well, and listen, that's the thing. You and I have disagreed on playing guys in the preseason, but when you have a legitimate competition for a job, it's different, right? There was no scenario last year where Mitch wasn't going to be your starting quarterback. So
right.
Even if he is not good and you can say, he hasn't earned the right to not play in the preseason, we knew he was better than Chase Daniel, or at least represented hope much higher than Chase Daniel.
Yeah.
So him getting hurt was not worth the risk to me of 40 extra snaps in the preseason. Reasonable minds can debate that, and we did all August. But now, when there's actually a competition, supposedly, of who's going to start, and I think Nagy already knows, personally. I just think that he traded for the guy, he took the veteran in his own system, Mitch hasn't progressed, he inherited him, and he doesn't want to have a third year with a quarterback that wasn't of his choosing. So
right.
I'll be floored if it's not Nick Foles. Tanny, let's hear some of it. Let's hear Pace and Nagy talking about the competition, the acquisition, how Mitch took it. You can take it in any way. I'm obviously not in front of the screen for what we have available, but let's hear some of the coach and general manager today on what this is going to look like at quarterback for the Bears.
The focus is on the quarterback position. It's been a focus for us. With the addition of Nick Foles, is exactly what we talked about from the start. We've increased competition at a critical position, and we talked to both players, and the way we view this is it's an open competition. And credit to both those guys for embracing it.
What we're trying to do is what's best for the Chicago Bears, plain and simple. That's what it comes down to. And so like I was saying, Ryan and I have had great talks with both of them. What's important and what y'all are going to find out in this process is going to be real simple. It's going to be very transparent and very honest. And so what I thought was really neat when we just talked to Mitch, which speaks to who he is you could feel how much of a competitor, and you know it and you see it. He's a competitor now, and he's embracing it and excited to get back to work. With that said, part of the conversation that we discussed too was understanding here, the big picture is, I know that Mitch gets a lot of this, but, you know, we could have been a lot better coaching schematically, and I could have been a better head coach. And then we all know, you know, we can always be better players around them as well. So that's a focus there. But Mitch is really embracing it. He's had an unbelievable personality throughout it. He understands it. All he wants to do is be the best quarterback he can be for the Chicago Bears, and that's what he's going to do as we move on here. Nick, the same thing. You know, I have a history with Nick. I know who he is as a person. He's been great as well. He's a special person, and Ryan and I looked into that, knowing that when this went down, and I think that that's very important that we don't lose sight of that as we go through this competition. He's been in this position before, and he's handled it great. You know, I personally went through it with him in Kansas City, a little different, but I know obviously who he is. It's going to be a process evaluated over time, and like Ryan said, it's a collaboration of Ryan, some of the guys on his staff, myself, and then along with Bill Lazor, Dave Ragone, John DeFilippo. And those guys all have extensive background with quarterbacks, and we're looking forward to that. You know, we're not there yet. You guys will have questions, but we'll have a great plan on how to evaluate it. And then, you know, ultimately what it really comes down to is winning, scoring points, you know, physical and mental toughness.
That is Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. We'll see how transparent they end up being. Nick Foles restructured his contract in a big way, so that number is not overwhelming for the Bears financially, and it is incentive-laden. So the more he plays and the better he plays, the more they pay him, and he has the ability to get out of the deal and hit free agency if he has, you know, seriously a great run with the Bears here in the short term. But this is a win-now move, I think, by bringing in a guy who knows the system. And again, the COVID-19 scandal hangs over everything, right, sports and otherwise. I think that a big reason why they acquired Nick Foles was because, like, this guy knows the offense. The learning curve for him is going to be way, way, way less than it's going to be for any other new quarterback.
Yeah, I find it interesting, too. Matt Nagy still feels the need to check himself shortly after talking about being transparent and it being an open competition, and have to point the thumb to protect the fragile ego of Mitch Trubisky. I could be a better coach, and we could be better players around him. Stop that already. Enough. He doesn't, you know... He's got somebody he's going to compete with. And Ryan Pace saying, and it's a credit to both of them, that they're open to it. Is that an admission that Teddy Bridgewater didn't want anything to do with it? Is that what he's telling us indirectly there? Oh, it's a credit to both Mitch and Nick that they were open to the competition. Because Teddy wasn't. That was the report I had a few weeks ago. That was what I thought of immediately when he said that.
Yeah, good call. I did not think that, but that is certainly possible, I suppose. It still strikes me as ridiculous that the Bears were potentially willing to... Because Teddy Bridgewater's got way more money guaranteed from the Panthers than Nick Foles has from the Bears. So it would really surprise me that the Bears were... that Teddy Bridgewater would get that type of money from here and not think he was the starter, but I suppose anything's possible, right? Robert Quinn said he flipped a coin and didn't know that Chuck Pagano was the defensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears.
Well,
I
just, you know, thinking about who's better, Nick Foles or Mitch Trubisky, doesn't it seem obvious that you would choose a guy who's won a Super Bowl? But he's not coming in here being given the job. He's going to be given an opportunity to compete for it. That's it.
Well, that's what they're saying publicly.
Yeah,
that's what they're saying publicly. But again, though, they're not making the multi-year financial commitment of guarantees to Foles that they would have if they paid Teddy Bridgewater what he got on the open market.
Right.
Right. So if they would have signed Teddy Bridgewater to that deal, it would be unbelievable if they would sign him to that deal and then come out of the introductory press conference or teleconference today and be like, yeah, it's going to be a competition. Oh, really? Really? For $60 million? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's interesting. Uh-huh. You're not picking up the fifth-year option on Mitch. He's got a $9 million cap hit. You signed this guy for $60 million, and it's a competition? You need more people. We don't believe you. So they can sell it a little bit easier on Foles, but they are still refusing to say whether or not they're picking up the fifth-year option on Mitch. Spoiler alert, they won't be. If somehow Mitch Trubisky turns some corner this offseason, becomes great, wins the job, and balls out this year, they'll just franchise tag him. Like, they're not going, you know, if Mitch Trubisky becomes awesome, they don't just lose him. They'll franchise tag him, and they'll be happy to have that problem on their hands. But spoiler alert, it's not going to happen.
No. It's not. I had to laugh a little bit today hearing Bernstein handle a few not exactly outstanding telephone calls from Bears fans who wanted to jump in, and one guy talked about how the acquisition of Nick Foles is going to light a fire under Mitch Trubisky, and Dan was actually very polite with the dude, more so than he typically has been historically, or maybe I would have been. It's not about a fire being lit under Trubisky. No one's ever accused him of not wanting it bad enough or not working hard enough at it. He's just no damn good. That's your problem. It's not about fire. It's about ability. He lacks it. That's your problem.
You're wrong.
Yeah, it's normally a good foundation to start on.
They're going to light fire under this Trubisky's.
You want your quarterback to be, you know, good.
Good.
It's helpful.
Yeah.
It's helpful. Nick Foles. The thing is, the Bears are going to have – we are going to spend a lot of time if and when training camp happens – talking about a quarterback competition between two guys who might not be, and in Mitch's case definitely is not, top 20 quarterbacks in the NFL.
How's everyone doing? This is Nick Foles.
You're right.
Is that how he started his teleconference, Danny? That's great. That's how's everyone doing? That's beautiful.
How's everyone doing? This is Nick Foles. Yeah, I think, you know, obviously with technology you can text.
Yeah, you can text.
You can.
That's a good point. But, like, we're going to have to be threading that needle when we talk about it, right? It'll be the biggest story in Chicago when NFL comes back and the Bears get ready to go. The quote-unquote competition between Trubisky and Foles.
Right.
I think it's already decided that it's Foles. We'll see. But even if it is Foles, the hope is that he can be a top 16 NFL quarterback. Right, just give you league average quarterback play with this defense.
Given league average quarterback play, an uptick in takeaways defensively, and an improved running game, and hope that David Montgomery is what they thought he was going to be, and then you've got a chance. Yes, those three things all have to come to the fore.
Yeah, I'm saying just within the context of a quarterback competition, right? You've covered enough of them, enough Bears training camps to know if there's a quarterback competition, that is like stories A, B, C, and D, and then everything else falls in behind it. Even though what you're saying is obviously true, right? They need the takeaways to come up. They need to be healthier. They need to improve the running game. They need to bolster the offensive line. They need tight end production. All of those things are true. But when the team says there's a true open quarterback competition, that will be covered like the kicking derby from last year with a scale of 100-1. And what just needs to be reminded is it's really not that tough of an ask. Just can you get league average quarterback play?
Uh-huh.
There's no one who's going to go in the next year thinking, you know, no one's betting on a Nick Foles MVP ticket. Like I did on Trubisky last
year.
Yeah,
that was a good investment on your part. That was real smart.
Yeah, well, you know, got a lot of content out of it.
Yes, you
met did. Met the guys at PropSwap, turned it into a little business at the station.
But beautiful. Yeah, you're all good.
Yeah, yeah.
You covered it.
It paid for itself.
Isn't that nice?
It is. Aren't you happy for me? I thought you might be. It's McNeil and Parker's on the
call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Score.
Nope.
Hey, John boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
Hello to a new adventure. Living my life in Michigan, my home state, surrounded by family and friends.
Columnist for MLB.com.
I think that with the White Sox, to see Moncada, the consistency of his work was really important. I think they're going to hit.
Out of here! Yoan Moncada drills it!
MLB Network Insider.
I think Theo at his worst. He would have no reason to begin a season with this framework of urgency and some pretty candid commentary and rhetoric about his own team if there was not some teeth behind it.
October starts in March.
Fox Sports Baseball contributor.
Yeah. Fox Sports Baseball God. John Paul Morosi.
I'm a guy, I'm not the guy.
John Morosi.
How about this for a homecoming?
With McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including grocery store employees, restaurant staffs, and delivery drivers. We appreciate you. With all the baseball craziness and rumors and happenings and not happenings of the season, we wanted to talk to our guy John Morosi of Fox Sports and the MLB Network, and because he's just a friend of the show and station, we wanted to check in with him to make sure he's doing okay during these crazy times. JP, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great, Danny. Thanks so much for having me on the show today. Yeah, here in Michigan, so a lot of time at home, of course, a lot of time homeschooling my daughters, which has been a lot of fun. My wife is a doctor, so certainly that's been the main focus of the house, is making sure that she can do the important work she's doing at the hospital. Certainly, Danny, on my best day, I am not even within many orders of magnitude in terms of value to society as my wife on any day of my life. But certainly now that chasm is much wider than ever before. And so certainly keeping that perspective in mind and supporting her in what she's doing has been probably my biggest job here the last couple of weeks.
Awesome. John, that's great to hear. I've been following you on Twitter, and I see you've been very, very active. How are you guys doing in the Detroit area in terms of collecting everything you need, ventilators and all the protective equipment for healthcare workers?
Well, Dan, thanks for asking the question about that. Certainly, I can't speak for everybody, and it's, I know it's been kind of an effort by a lot of different hospitals and municipalities. I know just, of course, you guys know that I live in Ann Arbor, and Michigan Medicine's done a great job of a lot of drives there to bring in a lot of PPE for the healthcare workers and ventilators and equipment there, which has been just incredible to see the outpouring of the effort there. A lot of it, certainly from a standpoint of what you could actually bring in, is mostly along the lines of protective equipment. Obviously, ventilators are so highly specialized, but we've seen, of course, the auto companies here helping out now with that effort as well. And as you guys all know, it's just kind of building gradually and hopefully getting better in terms of the equipment there. But Chicago and Detroit, as you know, we've kind of been two of the cities that have been hit hard the last week or so. And so certainly it's been a tough time for a lot of our fellow Midwesterners who have been going through this. And certainly, first and foremost, my thoughts and prayers with everybody that's been affected most directly by it. And I think that we're all realizing, as you guys, and I know you've talked about it too, certainly our obligations as citizens first and foremost right now, and just staying home whenever possible, and then helping out, whether it's by donating blood or just to supporting those who are on the front lines of this, is the best we can do right now. And I think the better job we do with that, hopefully, is the quicker that we can get back to enjoying the great routines that have meant so much to our lives, and certainly baseball is a big part of that.
We'll talk baseball about the plans for the season maybe with you in just a minute, but yesterday's show was largely spent eulogizing
White Sox radio voice Ed Farmer. You've been around the game a long time. I'm sure you've had plenty of interactions with Farmio. Have any stories or personal anecdotes you'd like to share?
Well, I think, Danny, just for me, what a profoundly great storyteller. And as a great storyteller of the games and of the White Sox, I think his life itself is an amazing story. And I think that the White Sox did a beautiful job of yesterday sharing that video in which he described his journey of loving the Sox, growing up in the South Side, dreaming of one day pitching at Comiskey, then being able to do that, becoming an all-star for the White Sox, then an executive, and then broadcasting the games. What an amazing baseball life, an amazing and unique American story that certainly you all know so well in Chicago. But I think for all of us, you know, he's somebody that I always enjoyed seeing in the press box, would always share a good word, and he connects so well with everybody. I think whether it was an all-star Hall of Fame player, whether it was a custodian of the ballpark, people that worked in the cafeterias where we'd see him in Comerica Park here in Detroit, he's so gracious to everybody. And I think that example, as we're talking about what we're all going through now as Americans and as citizens of the world, I think Ed gave us a tremendous example of grace, and his own health challenges over the years, and what an advocate he has been for organ donation, the lives that he's impacted that way. I think, again, we have to think about what platforms we all have in life, and now more than ever. And I think Ed Farmer, with so many things to so many people, he used his platform for the greater good in a very powerful way that I think has an incredible legacy in a human way for so many people, whether they were loving the White Sox or not. I think he touched a lot of lives. Certainly loved Notre Dame. I know that as well. I know he's certainly beloved in South Bend, too, and his amazing story of him going to St. Rita as well. So just, again, a story that I think all of us as Midwesterners can relate to and appreciate, and he had an amazing life that allowed him to really reach a lot of people in a very powerful way, and for that I think we're all grateful to have met him and been able to share experiences with him there over the years.
John, that's very well said and well informed, and the baseball announcer has such a unique relationship with his listener. It's such a personal relationship, and I don't know if anybody in Detroit has ever since Ernie Harwell rivaled that sort of command over a community that Ernie enjoyed, but certainly you knew what that was like growing up with him on your transistor radio on the back porch.
Well, you're right. I mean, Ernie is so special, that voice, and honestly, in the last couple of weeks, the poem that Ernie would always read at the beginning of the very first spring training game of the year, and the Song of Solomon, "For Lo, the winter is past," those words that you'd hear in Ernie's voice, opening day is going to mean something very unique to all of us this year, and I think to hear those words and that recording, actually somebody played them for me a couple weeks ago, and it really gets you emotionally when you hear those words, because you know what they mean, and I think that is one of the special parts about baseball, is that you've got your local announcer who speaks to you right in the heart and is part of the soundtrack of your lives. And I know Ed has been that for the White Sox for so long, and one of the great joys I think of being able to cover baseball is to travel and to get a chance to hear the different local broadcasts in each city. And now, of course, with the MLB app, you can do that no matter where you are. And I know Ed's broadcast, because of just how uniquely Chicago it always was, is one that no matter who the White Sox were playing, I'd want to flip over to his just to hear that voice and the trademark calls that he had for so many years. So it's just Ed was certainly in Chicago part of that texture of the game, as Ernie has been here, and certainly Dan Dickerson since then. But it really is a unique part of the game, and that is why, guys, as we talk about, and we don't know when. We don't know when baseball comes back. We don't know what it's going to look like, if there will be fans, how many fans there will be. But I do know this, and we all know this as people that love baseball, that baseball does, no matter where you're at in the standings, it has a way of giving you consistency and normalcy and routine. And I think we all are missing those things right now. And so whenever baseball comes back, and I'm going to be an optimist and believe that it comes back at some point in time this year, don't know when, but I'm going to be an optimist and think that it comes back at some point in 2020, that whenever it does, no matter how many fans are in the stands, I really do think the most important thing is going to be to turn on your radio or television set or your app at 7 o'clock local time, and to have baseball and to have that there with you every day. Because I think we're all being very well informed about COVID-19 and what's happening now. I also think that a diversion, when the time is right, when it's safe to do so, will be very welcome and wonderful for us to enjoy from home. And I think that baseball, because of that soundtrack of summer, will represent, I believe and I hope, something very powerful here in 2020.
John Morosi, Fox Sports and MLB Network, is our guest. I understand wanting to operate with optimism, John, of course. Like, we will get through this. It's just a matter of when and how long. But baseball sounds tricky to me. I'm curious, like, what things you've heard about alternative plans, unconventional plans, that you think are actually viable if and when baseball starts up again.
Well, Danny, I think the biggest thing that I'll say here, and I'll start by saying I don't know what plan A looks like. I'm not sure anybody really knows what plan A looks like as to what the most likely date of resumption of play is. But what I am encouraged by, broadly speaking, is the fact that it really does appear to me that MLB and the union are having a very robust conversation about different ways to make this work. And while I realize the agreement indicates that they want to wait until there are no travel restrictions and wait until you can have fans in the ballparks, it does seem to me that there is some wiggle room here. And to me, if you I'm speaking of you, I'm saying like you, the baseball world, if you're willing to get into a mind frame where we're going to say, listen, we can go and play a game if this city has, unfortunately, a recurrence of COVID-19 and it becomes a hot spot again, it's important, I think, and I think this is part of the understanding here, to be able to move games as needed or to be able to play games without fans there out of the public safety consideration, but to find ways to keep the season moving forward when and where it is safe to do so. I think that's going to be the big clause here, when and where it is safe to do so. And if that means that we have got to centralize play in areas of the country where it is safe to do so, maybe with reduced fans and crowd size, I think that's a very important tool to have in the toolkit. We all would love to see ballparks full when the time is right and when it's safe, but I think we all realize that just how devastating this illness has been for so many people in so many communities, it just doesn't feel like it's going to be one of those years where we can just open up the ballparks and everything's going to be just like normal from the word go. I think we're going to have to be creative here, and if we're creative, if everybody realizes different ways to make this happen, does it mean that, hey, when it gets to the fall, if there's an uptick in cases in the north, do we then move everybody back down to spring training locations and play games there? That seems like that would be a good tool to have in the toolkit, depending on how things go. I think the more layers of fans, no fans, smaller venues, different sites around the country where it's warmer potentially and the virus is maybe less prevalent at different times, the more that you can do that, that gives you more flexibility to potentially play there into the fall, I think we're all better off there.
My question, though, Andy McCullough wrote a great piece on it at The Athletic. We've talked about it here. What happens when one coach, one player, one trainer on one team tests positive once you've started it back up, and then that whole team has to go into 14 days of self-quarantine?
Well, that's a very fair question, and that is, by the way, effectively what has been happening in Japan and Korea, where they have not yet been able to start. I think that we will get, and I will say it make clearly clear that I'm not, as not a doctor, it's hard for me to be able to say what the recommendation will be at this point in time or in 2 months from now, 3 months from now, if and when that happens. Because you're right, it is an inevitability unless you get the rate of transmission down to zero, which is going to be pretty darn difficult to do by all the experts, what they're saying, that has to be looked upon as being a very plausible circumstance. We don't know, and I think we all are looking at the big picture and realizing that a vaccine is not close. I mean, that's what all the experts are saying right now. So how close are we to there being treatments that work? We don't know that. So there's a difference between a vaccine and a treatment. We don't know how close we are to that. I think that's one variable to consider there. If and when we get treatments in the interim, how does that change how you respond if one player on one team tests positive? But if it's the current situation, you're going to see what basically happened probably in the NBA with regard to one particular team. And what does that mean? I think the one positive side of things, though, is that you do have outdoor venues where players are generally more spread apart than they are at a basketball court. And you're outdoors in the summertime when we hope the transmission is a little bit mitigated by the weather factor. We hope. We don't know, but that's a belief that it may be, in fact, the case. So there's a lot of maybes and a lot of what ifs. But I think to your point, in the current circumstance on this day, yeah, you would say you have to probably isolate the team for 2 weeks. But where we are on this day in April may not be where we are with the science and treatment and different testing and tracing in 3 months. The more tests you can do, the more creative and maybe the more nimble you're going to be able to get in terms of isolating and moving forward if you have more complete information as it relates to tests. But where we are with that in 3 months, we just simply don't know.
John, how insistent is baseball on giving America something, even if it means the sample size would not be large enough to determine a legitimate World Series champion and have some form of playoffs that we would recognize?
Well, I think that if baseball can come back and play a meaningful number of games, and I think that it's in the public spirit to try and play when it is safe. I think that baseball will probably, when we look at it here, try to, whenever it's safe to do so. I think they'll probably err on the side of, if we've got a window to play, let's try to make this work. We've already seen Bob Nightingale reporting this recently at USA Today, players saying they'd be comfortable playing well into November and maybe even December. And especially when you think about, okay, that would mean warm weather, neutral site playoffs, get to that one or two spots in the country where you feel like the transmission rate is low at that point in time, and it's a warm weather venue that you're going to be able to play either indoors or outside in a warm spot, you do it. I think that to me is giving the fans some level of enjoyment. The commissioners talked about wanting to be there as a part of the healing process for the country. And I think that, to me, says that consideration, that even if you've got 3 months, maybe 3.5 months, somewhere in that range where you feel like you can probably play something, I think that is enough. In my view, that's enough to try to do something. Does it mean that we get 90 games or thereabouts, or 80 games probably is maybe what you could do with three and a half months. Perhaps you could do it that way, but then you maybe have an abbreviated playoff, or maybe it's a different theme of the playoffs entirely. We've seen baseball talking about different methodology, different playoff formats already was being discussed months ago before the coronavirus hit the U.S. For the future, but I think that now could be fast-tracked. You could see a different playoff look for 2020. I think in general, Dan, for me, playing the games when it's safe to do so, I think is something that MLB and the players will want to do, and they will probably, if the question comes, do we have enough time to play a meaningful season? I think that what represents meaningful takes on a very different context when we consider the value and just in having, even if it's a two or three months worth of evenings where we can share our national pastime again. That seems to me to be something that's a worthwhile endeavor if, in fact, we get the word that it's safe to do so.
John Morosi, Fox Sports, MLB Network. Good to hear you, man, even if there's no baseball. Thank you for your time.
Hey, love the conversation, and guys, thanks for all the well wishes. Thanks for all you do to keep the conversation going. And I'll still be an optimist, guys, that we'll hopefully have some baseball to talk here in 2020.
Thanks, John. Take care, man.
My pleasure.
That's John Morosi on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. There's no problem with optimism. I saw Dabo Swinney today, the head football coach at Clemson. He said there is no doubt in his mind that there will be college football this year in full packed stadiums. He's basing it, of course, on nothing other
right.
than
Dabo.
His gut.
Right. Dabo Swinney, what a great job.
But he's a man of faith, isn't he?
That is putting it lightly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is putting it very, very lightly. Yeah. Like, good. Optimism is great. There's nothing wrong with it. Just as long as everyone follows the scientists and the recommendations of the doctors, right? We're all rooting for there to be college football and NFL football and a representative baseball season. And I really want to see Lakers Bucks in the NBA Finals. Like, I'd be okay if those were the only two teams that came back and we didn't play a playoffs and we didn't play the last 15, 17 games of the regular season. I just want to see Giannis versus LeBron and Anthony Davis for 6 or 7 games. I'd
Fair
be cool
enough.
With that.
That's a good yeah. NBA season for me, a series.
Yeah, screw the Clippers, screw anyone else in the East. Like, I just want to see Lakers Bucks for 6 or 7 games, and we can call it an NBA season. But man, it's hard right now to find a little bit of optimism.
Yeah.
Personally.
Hey, I found some potty mouth here I want to share with the audience. Not the kind of potty mouth that's going to get us in trouble, but the foot-loving Rex Ryan is covering his tracks today. He's apologizing for something he said. I just stumbled upon this a couple of hours ago. I don't know if you saw this. ESPN analyst Rex Ryan is feeling embarrassed for something he said about Cowboys wide receiver Amari Cooper. What did he say about Cooper? Well, let's give it a listen.
I wouldn't have paid this guy. To me, this is the biggest disappearing act in the National Football League. He doesn't show up on the road. He doesn't show up against, when the competition's good, when he's against the top corners, that guy disappears. And to me, he reminds me, it's only one time that I can remember in recent memory on elite receivers and disappearing acts like Amari Cooper. That was the kid that the Raiders had a few years ago. Oh, that's right. That was Amari Cooper. This is who he is. And Dan, he doesn't love football. Hell with it. He stops his routes. He does all this. I wouldn't have paid this turd. No way in hell.
All right.
No way in hell would I have paid this guy. To me, you pay Dak Prescott. Forget all those numbers. That, you know, they're number one in the league because of Dak Prescott, not because of this guy. It's a deep draft at receiver. They made a huge mistake right here.
That's analysis, man. I wouldn't have paid this turd.
I wouldn't have paid this turd.
It's an interesting choice of adjectives on the ESPN airwaves. Not surprised he had to walk that one back. I've heard much worse in sports talk radio. So to me, that's a misdemeanor and not a felony. But
turd brain?
Yeah, there turd brain. There you go.
We don't have turds on this team.
Turd.
Turd, turd, turd. It's a turd. Funny word, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a funny word.
I like it. I can see it. You know, you say that word enough.
You like it? I like it.
Turd.
An image flashes immediately to mind. It's double tapered and it's medium.
It's vivid. It is.
I wouldn't have paid this turd.
And by the way, what did Amari Cooper ever do? I've never heard anyone say a bad thing about Amari Cooper.
You know, I've heard that he doesn't run out of his breaks and he doesn't like to block, but I've never heard anyone rip him pillar to post like that. That was pretty rough. That's Rex Ryan, man. That man needs some feet.
Needs some football in his life. Yeah, and some feet. That's absolutely right. We have enjoyed score stories, and we had an awesome week one. We really had a great week two as well. You will hear the best story from each of our score stories guests coming up on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.